Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Yeah, so let's start off by saying let's not judge me by the rest of the Australians that you've met, because I did a thing with Ryan Rollinsmith, Grant Bell from Peter Moreland, and we were just talking, and all of a sudden we're like, look, anytime someone brings up that you're Australian, you're like, please don't say that name. Please don't say this guy. Please don't associate me with those guys. And we all had the same exact expression of the way that it went down. We're like, no, we need to separate ourselves from some of the people that have come over, because we do have the reputation of being somewhat crazy.
Call that a knife? This is a knife.
That's not a knife, that's a spoon.
All right, you win. I see you've played knifey-spoony before.
That sounds like it's going to be a fun part of White Sox Nation, of White Sox seasons to come. That was Liam Hendricks, the White Sox new closer. He was on with Danny Parkins and Cody Decker yesterday. The full interview, we will bring that back to you in the 1 o'clock hour. He is a lot of fun. The egotistical narcissist, as he once called himself. And that is going to be how closing games is going to go for the White Sox. And he looks like he'll have many opportunities to do that. So let's find out just what this latest move means. And we here on Saturday Suckage, Steve Rosenblum and Mark Grody, we go to the guest hotline brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan. And we welcome in from Sox Nation with Josh Nelson and Sox Machine. Josh, what do you think? You got the best closer on the market for your team. This seems like if you're ever talking about checking all the boxes, Rick Hahn's doing that with a Sharpie that is probably going to keep going. But for now, this looks like everything you needed, your whole shopping list is being checked off.
Yeah, for the spending parameters that Rick Hahn may have, obviously after the 2020 season with the pandemic, with owners not making as much money as they have in the past, If this is the end, like this is as much as Rick Hahn can possibly spend this offseason from Jerry Reinsdorf sending down a budget, I think he's done a good job this offseason, especially acquiring, as you mentioned now, Liam Hendricks, the best closer in the game, and Lance Lynn to really bolster the starting rotation, especially year one through three. And then allow the exciting young arms like Dylan Cease, Ronaldo Lopez, and Michael Kopech fill out the back end of the rotation. I would feel more comfortable if they'd spent an extra $10 million to improve on the margins, bring some more depth into the team, because some of the depth I just don't trust as far as a talent perspective, especially like backup catcher. I think you can add another starting pitcher to help provide – to protect yourself just in case if somebody gets hurt in spring training or Lopez or Cease don't improve enough that you feel confident to have both in your starting rotation. You can live with one to at least start the season. But if they don't have that extra $10 million, then I agree with you. I think Rick Hahn has done a good job. And looking at how nobody else in the American League until yesterday when the New York Yankees signed DJ LeMahieu and Corey Kluber, nobody else in the American League is doing much. So if you're a White Sox fan, you got to feel pretty confident right now that if the season started tomorrow, I think it's Yankees and White Sox as the top two contenders in the American League.
That's incredible to say and to hear, considering where the Sox had to come from in the last 5 years or so. And here's another part to this too, Josh. And we talk about some of the, you know, the depth in the starting rotation. The Sox could have one of those situations where, and I don't think any of us can guarantee this at this point, where you have that shut down bullpen where beyond the fifth inning, you become like those Kansas City Royals teams. And I know that there's plenty of other examples. The Cleveland Indians for a while had something like that. It would assume that some of these guys like Matt Foster and Cody Hoyer, as good as they were, take the next jump. But you already have Aaron Bummer. Maybe Garrett Crochet could be part of that. Do you think they could have that shutdown bullpen where you don't have to worry so much about the depth in the starting rotation?
Absolutely. And you mentioned as far as all the key names, especially in the sixth inning, you don't have to lean on Ceesay Lopez to get you through six innings. You're just going to be asking them, can you get me through five innings? Because then we're going to have Cody Hoyer come in. And then, or we can go to Evan Marshall. And Garrett Crochet is going to start the season in the bullpen. And if he hands the ball off to Aaron Bummer, Bummer takes care of the eighth inning, and now you're in trouble because now you have to face Hendricks in the ninth inning. It really shortens up the game, and this is what the successful teams do, Mark, so well, is that, you know, every team can field three really good starting pitchers, and if they're all lined up in a series, you like your chances of winning that series. But the difference between teams that win a division and don't is how well they perform in the back end of the starting rotation. And if Tony La Russa has confidence in his bullpen, and he has the confidence that he can get at least five innings from that number four, number five starter, it's going to go a long way for the Chicago White Sox this year. And I do expect that they, you know, after signing Hendricks and now looking at this bullpen and the entire pitching staff as a whole, my expectation is they should win 90-plus games in this upcoming season. Where I have concerns, again, is what are they going to do at backup catcher and, you know, how they're going to handle the DH. But as you mentioned, the progress the White Sox have made in this rebuild, if those are your concerns as an American League team, then that's great because you can always address that during spring training, or you could always get another bat before the trade deadline in July. So I understand when Rick Hahn told the media yesterday, my team is on the court, referencing the Hoosiers movie quote. If he feels confident to start the season with this squad, I think he's got a lot of reason to be confident, knowing that I have to also be prepared to add pieces before the trade deadline to give this team a really good shot of maybe winning the American League pennant in 2021.
We're talking with Josh Nelson of Sox Machine. He and Jim Margalis do terrific work. It's wonderful reading. It's in-depth stuff. It's thoughtful. And we're happy that Josh is able to join us on the radio today on The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody with you. If you got to, let's say you got to pick one, Josh, and you talked about there's trepidation in your voice, and I get it, and you look at what's going to start the season with obviously an eye, the same eye that Rick Hahn looks at, October, going deep, winning a ring. It's all about that. It's all about the bling. They are all pointed toward that. If your choice was your $10 million for a DH or a starting pitcher, what would you sign?
I would go the starting pitcher route because every team to get through a 162-game season, and Major League Baseball seems dead set on playing 162 games in 2021, needs 8 to 9 starting pitchers at some point to get through the season. I'm having a hard time coming up with 8 to 9 names for the White Sox. So my thinking is that Ronaldo Lopez is going through a pitching motion change. And for some pitchers, like Lucas Giolito, it's seamless. For some, it's not. So instead of counting on Ronaldo Lopez being your number five starter, I would contemplate bringing back old friend Jose Quintana to be that number four starter for the White Sox and push Dylan Cease back to the fifth spot. Because at least with Quintana, I have confidence that you can get the ball to him as long as he buys a dishwasher and doesn't cut his hand. I have confidence you can get the ball to him, you know, 25, 30 starts, and he can go at least five innings for you, and you're not burning up the bullpen so much. So if I had $10 million, now, if Jerry said, Josh, you can have whatever you want to spend, I would say, give me $20 million, and I want Marcell Ozuna, because I can't believe he's still a free agent. And if you added somebody like Marcell Ozuna to this White Sox lineup, oh, my gosh. Like, it'd be one of the most deadly lineups in all of Major League Baseball. And that's going to be something to watch on how the rest of this offseason unfolds. The White Sox have done a good job this offseason. But just like what San Diego has done and what the New York Mets have done this offseason, there's an opportunity for the White Sox to not just build a very good team, but to build a super team, because so many teams are not participating in this offseason. And I would hate for them to look back and say, you know what, we did a good job, but regret not making that one extra move to give your to enhance your opportunity of not just winning the American League Central, but have 100% confidence you can go toe-to-toe with the New York Yankees. Because right now, that's what it looks like we are destined for, is that at some point, the Yankees and White Sox are going to cross paths in the postseason. And that's going to be your major hurdle if you want to get to the World Series.
I love the Ozuna idea, and it's I mean, like, maybe you could get some, like, what the like the deal they got with Encarnacion, and I get that in relative terms that didn't work out for the Sox, but even if you could just get a 1 or 2 year flyer on Marcell Ozuna, and that would be up to Marcell Ozuna, that would be awesome. Right. But the other guy, and you can comment further on that if you want, Josh, but the guy that I actually wanted to ask you about was, is there any reason Zach Collins can't be a sturdy backup catcher this year to Yasmani Grandal?
It's been, we've seen him so much, and I sigh, because ever since he was drafted, everyone that you talk to would tell you, outside of the White Sox organization, I don't think he's a catcher. I don't think he's a catcher in 2017, 2018. I don't think he's a catcher. 2019, I don't think he's a catcher.
So he's Schwarber.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like he should play more first base. But as far as backup catching goes, I think Yasmani Grandal is getting his mindset that he's going to catch 120 games. Okay. So now you're just asking somebody to sit back there and cover the other 42 games. And if that's the case, you could probably live with Zach Collins. I think what's more important for Zach Collins is that he needs to prove he can hit major league hitting, because that's been the eye-opening experience. Everyone thought he can't be a catcher, but everyone thought he's definitely a major league hitter, though. He's going to walk. He's got some pop. We're not seeing that. And we're not seeing that because he hasn't had a lot of opportunities. And he didn't have a lot of opportunities in 2020 to prove himself. So if the White Sox do seem destined right now in their plans, on their marker board, that Zach Collins is going to back up Yasmani Grandal, that's fine. But he needs more opportunities to prove himself. So you, because it's 2021. He was drafted in 2016. We still don't know what Zach Collins is going to be for the White Sox moving forward. And it would be nice to just be able to cement that verdict and say, this is what he is. This is how he can help. And if he can't help, then we got to move him to acquire someone that can help the roster.
We're talking with Josh Nelson of Sox Machine here on The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde with you. I found it, I have no reason to disbelieve anything that Liam Hendricks says. There seems there's a guilelessness, an honesty about him, a fearlessness about him off the when he's off the mound as much as there is on the mound. And I read these quotes about he talked to former Sox players. He loves Grandal as a defensive catcher. Any pitcher would. But talking about this group of guys previously on the team, he talks about the clubhouse. And we see this group of guys as a group that lets their swagger talk as much as their bats, and they are that way. And then he says, Liam Hendricks I'm talking about, says he loves old school Tony La Russa. And I hope those two ideas can coexist, and yet they seem headed for some kind of showdown, or if not a showdown, I guess optimistically headed for some kind of being entwined, that the swagger stays, but the focus gets better, it gets a little more, maybe add some humbling, but and that leads to better play. I don't know, but I found that, am I just reading too much into it? The fear of Tony La Russa sitting on all that is good and exciting and charismatic about this Sox team?
Well, see, the way I read that quote from Hendricks is that, and he raved about the White Sox after the postseason. In his postgame, after he closed out game three, he raved about the White Sox and, you know, how big of a fan he was for this team and thought that they had a really bright future. On the old school comment from La Russa, I took it from Hendricks as thinking he's not going to be afraid to pitch me four straight days. Like, if we have a two-run lead in four straight games, I'm going out there closing that game. There are some teams that would say, Hendricks, you get 2 days and you get a day off. You get 2 days, you know, two off, two on, one off, two on, one off. And I think with La Russa, that if Hendricks is strong and he feels good, that no, I'm not going to have any off days. I mean, his goal is to appear in 81 games this upcoming season. That's really unheard of for a closer. And you may want to save some of that energy and gas for the upcoming postseason. But you know, if La Russa, you know, kind of hooking on that old school comment, Hendricks has the must feel comfortable and confident and to get himself in a position where if they are playing against the Minnesota Twins, that yes, coach, I am ready. You can pitch me every single game. Don't worry about me. And that's how I took it from the old school mentality, because as we have learned with analytics and as far as roster management, that's not the case with a lot of teams.
No doubt about it. One guy that I wanted to ask you about was Andrew Vaughn. And I'm looking very, very curious as to see how Jose Abreu follows up his MVP season, if that's kind of what he is. Does he got a couple of elite years left in him? But does Vaughn spend the year on the real roster next year? And is he Jose Abreu in waiting?
That's such a high bar. I mean, if you look at White Sox first baseman since 1991, it is Frank Thomas, Mark, Paul Konerko, and Jose Abreu. You're talking about three guys that I think are going to have their numbers retired and have statues in the concourse. So Andrew Vaughn is following some big shoes in his upcoming White Sox career. But
yeah, I guess I don't mean so much is he going to be like those guys, but is he going to be eventually the first baseman of the Chicago White Sox?
Yeah, because you don't spend that high of a draft pick, not on a DH. He is going to be the White Sox future first baseman. Are we going to see him this year? Absolutely. When are we going to see him? I don't know. And there's a comfort thing for me because there's a lot of people that say, well, he looked great at Schaumburg. Who cares? Okay, that's not minor league baseball. He's facing the same pitchers all the time. He's facing his roommates. I need to see how he does when he goes on the road and, you know, he has a week-long slump. And we can watch him against opposing pitchers that have a game plan to get him out every single time. That's what I want to see. And I think that the way spring training is going to be set up, the rumor is that in February, it's only going to be the Major League and AAA roster. So I expect Andrew Vaughn to be part of the White Sox spring training unit in February, which means when the season starts, he's either in Chicago or depending if all the minor league affiliates sign their player development contract, which, whoo, boy, there's a lot of drama there. But if they do agree to sign it, then I expect Vaughn to start the season in Charlotte. But if he rakes in Charlotte and he's proving, like, for example, my doubts wrong, and it looks like, yeah, Charlotte is no test for him, might as well call him up, because I put out a poll on Twitter today asking who would you feel more comfortable with as the starting, you know, the opening day DH, Yuri Mercedes or Zach Collins? And I think a lot of White Sox fans are neither. I'd rather have Andrew Vaughn start the season if those are my two options. So we'll see how spring training goes, but I expect him to start the season, Mark, in Charlotte and AAA to get some at-bats in against opposing pitchers and prove his mettle. Once he's done that, then I expect him to join the White Sox, and you'll hear Rick Hahn say this is kind of like a big trade acquisition for us because now we get to add an elite bat to our lineup like Andrew Vaughn.
Well, something to look forward to in this championship season. Josh, always appreciate your insight. Thank you for your time. Stay well. Be healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. You too, guys. And by the way, Mark, you've done an excellent job covering the Chicago Bears mess. Godspeed. Enjoy this upcoming off season. I know how tough it's going to be, but you're doing a great job. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Josh. I appreciate that.
It's Josh Nelson of the Sox Machine, and you have done an excellent job, Mark, and you're going to continue doing it. After this break, we're going to come back with what Mark heard, a wonderful segment that allows Mark to bring his reportage and insight and the sounds of Hallis Hall to our Saturday Suckage airwaves. Speaking of these airwaves, by the way, 3 o'clock today. Rams at Packers. Our coverage on The Score starts then. Rams at Packers. The Rams with the defense coordinated by a guy the Bears let get away, Brandon Staley, against the quarterback the Bears cannot, never will, are hopelessly losing to. And there you go. Rams at Packers. And then around 6:45 or so, also on The Score, you'll hear the Ravens at Buffalo. The Bills playing at home, they're favored. This is welcome back to the 1990s kind of thing. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, what Mark heard. There was a lot to be heard at Hallis Hall this week. Mark will call it for us and bring it to our airwaves. Saturday Suckage, Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
We don't have turds on this team.
It's time for What Mark Heard, a rundown of the best sound coming out of Hallis Hall this week on Saturday Suckage with Mark Rohde and Steve Rosenblum.
Boy, everyone is stupid except me.
It's our new award-winning segment, What Mark Heard. Mark Rohde, tell us what you heard this week at Hallis Hall, and I hope to God you weren't wearing open-toed shoes based on what I heard this week at Hallis Hall.
Well, and part of this is I know that everybody in our listening audience and you too, Stevie Sunshine, you guys have heard a lot of it, at nauseam that we've played. You probably heard the press conference on 670 The Score. So I tried to pick through some stuff that maybe hasn't gotten as much attention, but will moving forward, and they are the most important parts of this team. So let me do it like that. We're going to start with hearing a cut, because this happened this week too. We're going to hear a cut from Allen Robinson. And Steve, after we hear it, I want to hear from you, because I haven't heard from you yet on this topic, whether or not you think Allen Robinson will return to the Bears. So here is Allen Robinson.
You know, again, I mean, it's nothing to take personal, you know, in general, you know, and at the same time, you know, I do have a great fondness for this city and for this organization. But unfortunately, in a situation like this, it's not the only thing that matters, you know. So, but again, I mean, like I said, since day one, you know, I have a ton of respect, you know, for the organization, from the McCaskey family, you know, again, from the Peyton family, you know, our front office, our coaching staff, and everybody. You know, I think everybody knows that. But, you know, like I said before, you know, sometimes in things like this, you know, there are more things that weigh out than the fondness or something.
Steve, you think Allen Robinson is going to return to the Chicago Bears next year?
No. I think he's saying all the right things. He's as coachable off the air as he is on the field. He's as coachable, coachable off the field as he is on the field. He clearly was was instructed by his agents that you want to maintain all your relationships. And as Mark Potash astutely pointed out, that Allen Robinson represents all the things the Bears said about their culture and getting along and working and playing well with others and being Boy Scouts. It represents everything more than winning, because the Bears don't know how to win, but they know how to grade people. That part of the press conference with George and Ted, McBeavis and Butthead, talking about great culture and you know, liking each other, smiling in the hallways, everything except winning, because they don't know how to win, but they don't know how to judge, but they do know how to judge someone smiling. I still believe that somebody in that football organization is going to realize your money has to be spent, your attention and your money has to start with the players closest to the football. I realize you'd be losing your best offensive player. There's nothing in this offense that really means you have to spend all that money on him. I think they're going to start with where the football is, the quarterback, the offensive line, and work their way out. And the receivers are the last ones to get the big money in a salary cap that might be pinched a little. So,
all right, I think everything you...
That's why.
Yeah. No, that all makes sense, man. The only I will disagree a little bit.
Okay.
I do think he's going to get the franchise tag, which means he's not going to be here for long, but I do think that they have to do that because we indicated a little bit earlier, what's left in that wide receivers room if Allen Robinson doesn't return for at least 1 year? Because, yeah, I think Darnell Mooney is for real, and he was good for a rookie, but he's still got a ways to go in his development and towards becoming a number one. I don't know if Anthony Miller is going to be back, and if he is, I don't know how much they're going to depend on him. And then, I mean, we've seen what they think of Riley Ridley and Javon Wims as receivers, and, you know, Ridley spent most of the year inactive, and Wims spent a lot of the year blocking. So I just think that it's imperative that they come up with some way to do it, and I don't think it's going to be by way of extension. And that brings me to this. This is Ryan Pace talking about... And I believe, yeah, this is the question that I asked him. I asked him if he, when Robinson was going through that kind of cryptic social media phase where he was expressing his displeasure, remember that? I asked Ryan Pace, the general manager of the Bears, if he talked to him around then.
We did talk. And Mark, it's always a balance with players in season with their contracts. You're always trying to strike a balance. You never want that to be a distraction. But ultimately, I care about Allen and you know, and his focus, you know. So Allen and I have talked about that. Allen and I have a good relationship. He's a highly intelligent football player. And then, of course, Joey Lane has had regular dialogue with his agents, especially at that point in time. But, you know, I think those things, you know, it's a two-way street. And those are just things we got to work through, you know, and without getting into the details and specifics. But to answer your question, yes, I did talk to Allen about it. And we have had a lot of discussions about that.
Well, and I think the most important part of that, Steve, was what Ryan Pace said, that it's a two-way street. So that says to me that they hit a point in the negotiations where both sides just weren't agreeing, that Robinson wanted more. And maybe he wanted the most of any of the guys that got paid wide receiver wise. And there was something in there that, you know, I'm inferring from what Pace said, a two-way street means that they heard something that they didn't like from Robinson's side.
I think you're right. I think that's good. We had originally, you brought to the airwaves the idea that Allen Robinson heard something for him to just sort of tamp down the rhetoric and just go about his ways, that it something that would be done, or there was an agreement of we're at where we're at. The season needs to be the focus, and we will pick it up at this point after the season. So you said that, you noticed that immediately, and you were right. Ryan Pace said you were right. Now we'll see how it plays out.
Yep. They talked, and that's why we didn't hear any more of the passive-aggressive talk from Allen Robinson from that point on. So, okay, let's go to Matt Nagy, because we didn't hear much from Matt Nagy throughout all of this. And, Steve, and you can comment on everything as it pertains to going out and getting a quarterback, whether it is Ryan Pace or Matt Nagy, but I thought it would be interesting to hear from Nagy on the need to settle on a quarterback evaluation process, because I do think that there should be a lot of voices in the room when it comes to getting the quarterback. Here's Matt Nagy.
there's so much that goes into that process, and there's a lot of different things that go into finding the different traits and the skills on and off the field at that position. And again, how you do it, how you go about it. And again, I could just go on and on about that part of it. And there's a lot to it, but that's something that, again, Ryan has experience doing, I have experience doing, and we just need to figure out our best way together.
And honestly, Steve, this is one time when the collaboration process is not something we should make fun of, because I think it's incredibly important that there are lots of voices in the room indeed collaborating on what direction they go, how they scout the quarterback, how they get the quarterback position right.
I would agree. And I'm all about active dissent, the sort of the team of rivals, as it were, the political term that is applying it to football. I'm all about that. There are two problems with that. Well, there are many, but in this particular instance, ultimately one person has to make that decision, and that one person, based on the hierarchy, means that it'll be Ryan Pace, who has been a quarterback putz in all three areas. He has blown the quarterback decision in free agency in Mike Glennon, he's blown it in the draft in Mitch Trubisky, and he's blown it in trades with Nick Foles. And he still has the final word. That part of the whole collaborative process scares me. And the idea of, there's nothing wrong with figuring out what the system, what matters, how it works, going this way, going that way, who are you gonna go with? But that offensive line at the end of the season, which arguably was the Bears' most consistent and best look at offensive lines, mm-hmm. came about through sheer desperation, injuries, whatever it was. They were down to those guys. This was not something the Bears' brass, the coach and the general manager and the coaching staff, actively decided upon. This is something they were reduced to. That would lead me to question their whole idea, their whole ability to collaborate and get it right. I don't have any doubt they can collaborate. I just have reasons to doubt that they can get it right, because I've seen where they haven't. Anyways, that's Stevie Sunshine is not shining today. So
yeah, no, I understand, and that's why I feel like your voice needs to be prominent today, as if it's not always prominent. But I know you it's been that you've been waiting some time to get some things off your chest. I totally get it. All right, let me move. And the offensive line will be interesting, too, in this offseason, because we know they figured some things out. But you get James Daniels back, what are they going to do with the tackles? You know, is Charles Leno and Bobby Massey back next year? I mean, that could be completely revamped even for next season. So that's something to watch as well. All right, now let's get on to the salary cap and the space that exists and how aggressive the Bears will or will not be in this offseason. Ryan Pace talking about, will you or will you not commit to being aggressive with cap space?
As you know, every year there's ways to create cap space, and those are all important decisions that we have to make. You know, it kind of starts with that, evaluating our own roster and talking about some of those things. That's real. That'll be out throughout our whole team, though. And then, you know, analyzing what's out there in free agency, but being conscious and being responsible, knowing exactly what you're talking about. And then really understanding the draft and the depth in the draft at certain key positions is important.
All right, I want to see if you agree with me on this, Steve, that in the NFL, desperation is good. And I guess you could use the example of 2018. That was a desperation season for Ryan Pace. It was really the first year in which he was starting to get some heat, having been hired in 2015 and not having had a winning season. It was the first year. It was like, all right, you hired your new coach, but there's not going to be a honeymoon because you got to get it right. So he goes and gets Khalil Mack. The Bears were 12-4. He's GM of the year. Matt Nagy is coach of the year. Do you think desperation will suit the Bears well going into what is a must-win season?
Desperation suited them well on the offensive line. They had no choice. Desperation True. To bring back Mitch Trubisky to beat bad teams. Look, they were looking for an offensive identity. They can beat bad teams. There's your identity. They reluctantly ran the ball. The only reason they did is because Cordarrelle Patterson was hurt. They had to go with the one running back that they drafted. They traded up to draft because he was a running back. So a lot of what the Bears have done well or been more successful at has been out of desperation. So Yeah, Mark, you bring up an interesting point, and I would think they have a better chance out of desperation because forethought hasn't worked much with them.
Yeah, and this season was, man. Like, I asked the question on the radio earlier this week, like, what was this year to you? Was it 5-1? Was it 0-6? Was it 3-0?
It was 0-2 at the end. It was 0-2 at the end. That was your frame. Two playoff teams, two really good teams, a rival and a team that you thought you were going to grow up to be, and you got spanked.
Yep. That was it. 0-2. You could say 0-6 and 0-2 were the two were what defined the season, because there was that point during the winning streak where I was like, okay, maybe this is for real. Maybe they can be good. And then no, they were not on par with the good teams.
No. All right.
One more, Steve.
All righty then.
This is, as you know, I think you may have even tagged this the mom show. It's the mom show from Gene Grody to Alice Studzinski to
Mama Thayer.
Amen. I think we may have a new candidate to the mom show with this question that I asked of Cole Kmet.
Cole, I'm going to ask you this. How fired up was the Kmet family over the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty? Were they pissed?
Yeah. I mean, my mom was upset because she knows her son would never do anything like that. So, so she was a little fired up at the game. So, like I said, it is what it is at this point.
Oh, my God. Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah, we need Mama Kmet. We need Kmet to come on and just see what the degree, how... What was her? We take her temperature, and we talked to her about, you know, being in the city. You're in the city, and there's your son. He's doing this, and he got better. He was a huge bright spot. He was an example of a Ryan Pace offensive draft choice that proved that by the end of the year. He got better. The arrow's pointing up. He was providing all the things you need. He could catch. He could block. He'd be big and thrilled to be there. So I wanted. Yeah, we need to talk to Mama Kmet. Yeah.
We're gonna see if we can. You do that. We're gonna see if we can arrange that. That would be great. She has a chance to be a star mom on this show. And everything you just said was right. Not only all that, but Cole Kmet will run your ass over, which I love.
Right. Right. That's good. All right. So we'll look forward to the Mama Kmet moment. Maybe she could be a regular on this show. But I like that whole idea. That's the value of having a hometown kid doing it. So, all right. What Mark heard, we're actually talking about football as opposed to clown college. So I really like that. Well selected. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have Bachelor number one is now producing the show. Trash Panda's on his way. We have to call Alice and just say he ditched out on us.
Again.
And we have some more text to read. And the confluence of the Venn diagram that brings Sports Radio and the Wake and Bake Club together, besides our show. But it's a story after the heart of our show. So we'll bring that to you. All that next, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Damn, Willie, man, like, do we suck?
Yeah, we are. We're Saturday Suckage. Thank you for joining us. We're also the Wake and Bake Club. The WB Club has some, and we'll get to that right now. Earlier on Saturday Suckage, Mark wondered, well, he's Mark Grody over there. He wondered where people were listening to us, how they were listening to us, what they were doing. And he told you people not to drive. It's okay to smoke a fatty, but you can't drive and text. Anyways, 847, one of the selected ones. We were going through it, but I wanted to I selected this one. I'm listening on radio.com. Sure. I'm listening on the radio.com app on the red purple line to my medical marijuana dispensary in Evanston.
Weed!
Bake on, so boys. Great. Neil from Old Irving Park, which leads me to, this is the Venn diagram of what we do on the Wake and Bake Club and Saturday Suckage when we're doing sports. This week, demand was high on opening day for Gage Cannabis, a medical marijuana dispensary in Grand Rapids. A long line of cars stretched out as shoppers waited for close to an hour before they could make their purchases. So this pot medical marijuana dispensary mm-hmm. comes to Grand Rapids. The man in charge of making sure the new pot shop is a hit is Drew McCarthy, a former radio host known as Big Drew during his radio career.
Of course.
He had a successful stint at a four-letter network offshoot up there, 96.1, and he proudly quotes this like a radio guy. Quote, number one afternoon show for men 24 to 55 for a number of years. Had a great run, but everything comes to an end. So Drew McCarthy has a new gig as general manager at Gage Cannabis because of his familiarity with the product. I made a switch to cannabis, he says. Instead of alcohol, all these pills to treat anxiety, depression, and ADHD, now it's a much healthier, happy me. That is our Venn diagram.
Steve, I think that's, I know that you're living the Chicago Tribune buyout lifestyle, but I think that you should be an employee at one, because I know you're not trying to do all the hard work in life these days. Maybe you don't need to run the place. I think you should work at the counter of one of those places.
No, that would be great if I knew enough about it. I would, Toby would be the guy to know so much about that. He would be
the weed.
Yeah, sativa, indica, that would be that Toby could just, you know, but he would be the guy for the, if we had the WB Club store, Toby would be our guru. He would be our management expert. And you and me would just be back talking to people. That's what we.
Here's a few more of where people are listening, because I just wanted to credit these guys for guys and gals for.
There's a lot of them.
In.
Yeah.
I know, man. I know. I'm just trying to get just packs of them here.
Go for
Moving
it.
Moving into a new home, streaming on the radio. I love this. Cranked on the garage stereo, far, far away from the house. Buying chicken wings for the Packers game from the 847. Yoga pants. I thought that deserved it's the greatest thing ever, yoga pants.
That sounds like a score caller's name. A moniker on the score caller. yoga pants from Berwyn. You're on the phone.
Yoga pants. Let's see. Listening in Bluffton, South Carolina in a Target parking lot. Let's see. Cleared litter every day. Grody, you're a cat B. LOL. Well, I don't change the cat litter every day for Dave the cat. I just clean it out, if you know what I'm saying. That Dave deserves that.
That's so funny. There was just enough less there of clean it out.
I clean it out every day. A lot of people switch the litter. I scoop the poop, okay?
Yes,
that's what I do
go.
For my cat. That's what there I do. Love the radio.com app from the 309. Ripping a bowl, cleaning the house, and chowing leftovers. And he puts his name, Andrew, in Iowa. God bless you, Andrew. I hope you're enjoying it, buddy. Let's see, a couple Bears tech. Oh, I'm listening.
Well, I like this one because it shows how what a healthy lifestyle we breed at the Wake and Bake Club along with Saturday Suckers. 630 had texted an hour ago, laundry and COVID walking inside, what else can I do? 5,000 steps so far on my way to 40,000 for the day.
Whoa.
Down 50 pounds. Thank you, COVID and the score, for sucking my pounds away.
Wow.
That's a tribute to us. We are, but we're pleasers, not teasers. We're givers, not takers. That's what makes us American heroes. We'll do that for you.
We are heroes. And here's a competitor for the guy in the Target parking lot. I'm listening from a Menards in Minnesota, waiting for a refrigerator. Keep sucking.
We do. You know what? We have to take a break. When we come back, we will be doing, next hour is going to be busy. We're going to be doing What Are You Doing, Wegner? We'll be talking with Mark Gonzalez, our deluxe Cubs writer, who's not the Cubs writer for the Tribune anymore. And we will bring you the interview that Liam Hendricks did with Danny Parkins and Cody Decker. But as part of What Are You Doing, Wegner, we have yet another mom chapter to bring you. This is epic. This is just a great thing in the world that we live in today. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mark Grody. Thanks for listening to Saturday Suckage. Wherever you are, however you're doing it, however much weight you're losing, And whatever bathrooms you're cleaning, we appreciate all of it. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!